I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, February 11th, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Members present: Senator Rauscher, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Dunbar, Senator Klayman, Vice Chair Senator Wilikowski, and myself. I am Chair Giesel. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Kyla, who are keeping the minutes and running the audio for us. Today we have a presentation from the Alaska Railroad as they prepare for a possible Alaska natural gas pipeline. But I will add, I just got off of a call with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and this is relevant to the Resources Committee. The National Science Foundation is offering an critical mineral accelerator grant. And it's $170 million a year to accelerate the development of critical minerals. And so last year, I sent a letter of support. I believe this committee actually signed on to that letter. And so I was asked to speak to the visiting group. Today, the National Science Foundation is at the University of Alaska Fairbanks doing a site visit investigation kind of thing. Acting Commissioner Crowther is speaking to them right now. Senator Dan Sullivan just spoke to them. And Mike Sraga he's the guy in charge at UAF. I'm not sure what the word is for that.
He's the new chancellor.
Thank you, chancellor. All right. So anyway, pretty exciting. And I really hope they get that grant, because we have, as Senator Sullivan said, we have all of these critical minerals. And so it'd be a great place for that grant to be administered. So anyway, but back to the railroad. Who could transport some of those critical minerals? I would welcome to the table the president and CEO of the Alaska Railroad, Mr. Bill O'Leary. Clark Hopp is the chief operating officer for the railroad. And Megan Clemens, of course, visits us often here as the external affairs director. So welcome, all of you. Brian Lindemood is online. He's the chief engineer at Alaska Railroad. So I know you guys will call on him as needed. So welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much, Chair Giesel, Vice Chair Wilikowski. We are actually quite delighted to be here today. I think it's a great opportunity for us to share a little bit about the railroad. And as you said, Chair Giesel, about our preparations for the possible Alaska natural gas pipeline. We're going to take this in a couple different steps here. Megan is going to take us through, Ms. Clemens is going to take us through the just a little bit of overview of the railroad, talking a little bit about some of our capabilities in other areas. And then Mr. Hopp, our chief operating officer, will be discussing specifics to the work that we have done on the gas line itself. And then I'll be batting cleanup with some comments about some relatively late-breaking news on financing, for possible opportunities on that, and we'll finish up. So if there are no initial questions, again, I think for the record, I'm Bill O'Leary. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Railroad Corporation. And if there are no questions, I would turn it over to Megan Clemens.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And again, for the record, Megan Clemens, External Affairs Director for the Alaska Railroad, and delighted to be here with you all today. And as Mr. O'Leary mentioned, my portion here is going to be to offer a little bit of the background and current overview of the Alaska Railroad for the benefit of anyone listening who may be less familiar with our organization. And I hope that'll also serve as helpful context for later in the program as we start discussing plans for the LNG project. So the Alaska Railroad is an independent corporation owned by the state of Alaska. It was originally built and operated by the federal government, but transferred to the state in 1985. And at that time, the legislature set up the Alaska Railroad Corporation to operate very much like private industry. So we are owned by the state, but we are excluded from the Executive Budget Act. We are charged to operate without state general funds, and we do that through our business activities, offering both freight and passenger rail services, as well as real estate services. But that being said, as we are owned by the state, we do have very important ties to the state. And so we have a 7-member board, which is appointed by the governor. And we also have a number of key actions that are noted in our enabling statute that require legislative approval. So for a couple of examples, if we're going to issue bonds, that's something that would require legislative approval, or selling railroad land. That's another thing that would come to the legislature. So there's some important oversight and controls that are in place by virtue of our status as a state-owned corporation. And a quick note on our mission, which, you know, guides what we do. So we're charged with creating economic development opportunities for Alaska through safe, reliable transportation services and real estate services. And that's what we focus on. And I'm sorry, on the previous slide, any questions before moving on?
I don't see any. Thank you.
All right. Moving on to a quick snapshot of our current operating data. And again, hopefully this is a little instructive of, you know, what we're bringing to be able to support a large project like this. So our main line stretches from Seward up to Fairbanks in the interior. That's a little under 500 miles of track. We do also have spur lines, branch lines to Palmer, Whittier, and North Pole. And when you factor in, rail yard track as well, that brings us to, you know, pushing close to 700 total miles of track that we are responsible for. While passenger tends to get the most attention as a service that we offer, you can see that our freight fleet far outstrips our number of passenger cars. So we own just over 1,000, a variety of different types of freight cars, and those are supported by 55 locomotives. Also, while we are a railroad, we are a multimodal operation, so we do own port facilities in both Seward and Whittier. Whittier is an important rail barge link for us. That's what serves. It's our connection to the Lower 48 rail network. So we have a weekly barge service that operates from Seattle up to our port in Whittier. And there are actually tracks on the barge so that rail cars can roll directly on, secured for the barge transfer up to Whittier, and then roll directly on our system. It's a very efficient way to move goods from the Lower 48. And it's very important for Alaska. It's, again, a great connection to the Lower 48 rail network. Down in Seward, we actually have 3 dock facilities. The passenger dock has gotten a lot of attention in recent years. That was the bond authorization that we sought last year. Construction on that facility is moving forward. But we do also own a freight dock directly next door. And as we'll be talking about a little bit more here shortly, we've been receiving a lot of pipe into that dock in recent years already, but we would see that playing a big role in an LNG project, certainly. And I'll also mention our land is an important asset of the Alaska Railroad. So at the time of the transfer from the federal government to the state of Alaska, about 36,000 acres of land came over with the railroad. About half of that is what we consider operating land. So that would be, you know, rail yard terminals or the right-of-way that extends along the tracks. The other half of that is available for lease. And that's an important part of our revenue picture, generating the income that we need to actually maintain the railroad to a state of good repair. But again, I think that's another asset that I think will come into play with the gas line project. You can see our operating stats there. Annually, we move about 500,000 passengers along the system. We were just under 4 million tons of freight last year. Summer tends to be our busiest time in both business lines. That tends to be when out-of-state visitors choose to come to Alaska. But that's also gravel season as well. So it's a busy time of year for us in both areas. And again, you know, employment for keeping the railroad running anytime, but certainly looking at a big project, that's a big factor. We're just under 700 full-time year-round employees. That swells up to a little over 800 in the summertime.
Very good. This might seem like sort of a random question, but I believe most of your employees, well, they are union. That means they have pensions. And I've heard that they are long-time employees. You have significant retention of your employees. Is that accurate?
Chair Giesel, yes, that is accurate. You can see that about two-thirds of our total employees are members of one of five unions at the Alaska Railroad. We do offer a pension that is – it's an Alaska Railroad pension, so it's not associated with any federal railroad pension system or the state of Alaska. But yes, we do offer that as a benefit. And, yes, we do have a number of long-term employees at the railroad.
It seems like I meet a lot of your employees that have been there for their whole career and just love working for the railroad. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Who wouldn't want to work for the railroad? I did have a question on the 36,000 acres of land that were sent over after we assumed state assumed the responsibility. Is there land that's currently railroad land that's not has not been ceded over yet?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, no, at the time of transfer from the federal government to the state of Alaska, all of the assets, inclusive of all the real estate that was associated with the federally owned railroad, was transferred to the state. I think the hope was to keep it as a contained unit.
Super. Thank you.
Senator Myers.
Thank you. So also on the employment side, when we had DOT in here a couple of weeks ago talking about this, they mentioned one of their concerns is you start big, large construction projects, they're competing for kind of the same labor pool with DOT. Railroads, there's some crossover, but there's a little bit different as well. If a large project like the LNG project went through, would you anticipate having to compete for employees? You would, of course, probably be trying to expand some services, trying to find some new employees. Do you anticipate you'd be able to find those in labor pool, you know, bring some folks up from railroads down in Lower 48, something like that?
To the chair, Senator Myers, yes, good question. I mean, a project of this scale, I expect, is going to create a demand for employees for organizations across the state, and I don't think that would exclude the Alaska Railroad. Given the nature of our operations, I think there's the chance, depending on volume, that we would look to out of state, just given there's a fair amount of training involved for some of our operations, and so looking to the lower 48, to help fill some of those spots that require longer lead time, I think is a resource we'd look at.
Okay, thank you.
Good. I don't see any other questions. I'll let you move on.
All right. So this will give you just kind of a quick flyover, a summary of our freight business since 2011. And generally, when we show this chart, it's for a discussion of our different freight business lines. For the purpose of today's hearing, I thought that it was useful to show that we've got experience with variance in volumes. You can see we've had some, fairly significant fluctuations over the years. And, what we see coming potentially with the LNG pipeline, we think we could accommodate within, what we've handled in the past. So certainly it's an event that we would prepare for to be able to scale up to meet the developer's timeline and maintain our current business lines. But you can see that fluctuations in volume is something that we have handled before.
Very good. Senator Klayman.
Just looking at that volume numbers and roughly at, other than 1 year, everything from 2017 earlier is all over roughly four million. I got the right. Mm-hmm. Well, over 4 million, and then once you get after 2017, everything is dropped. What's the reason for the drop in freight and why?
That's it.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman. So, yeah, it's certainly noticeable for quite a while. This graph, I was referring to this as one of the sadder things you could ever see from the railroad's perspective, but we have started to come out of it. Driven primarily by two business lines, weakness in two business lines is what you're seeing between 2011 and 2021, and that primarily related to our petroleum Hall. As many of you remember, for a number of years, we moved a tremendous amount of refined product from the Flint Hills refinery outside of North Pole down to the port of Anchorage, where it was then transferred out to Anchorage International for jet fuel. So that, with the closure of the Flint Hills refinery in the 2014 timeframe, that made a significant. They had been stepping down certainly over a number of years. If you were to take that graph back earlier into the 2003-2004 timeframe, you would see that bulk petroleum part of the graph was, at least double that, if not triple that, at the time. So that was item number one, certainly. The second was the demise of export coal. We run coal from the Yucabeli coal mine, both north to into the interior, Fairbanks, and to the bases around there. We also, up until the 2014 timeframe-ish, 2015 timeframe, we used to run coal down to Seward from Healy, and where it would be exported through the coal loading facility down there, and would go to places, Chile, Korea, Japan, places like that. Given the world markets and the strong dollar at the time, export coal was no longer, and it was, again, you're seeing there in 2011 or so, it was, over a million tons of export coal. So between petroleum and coal, that accounted for the vast majority of the drop in freight revenue.
Senator Myers.
Thank you. I was just curious if you had it's not in this presentation, I see, but curious if you had this same slide, but in dollar figures of cargo instead of volume of cargo. Just curious.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, yes, we certainly do. I mean, we look at it. Sometimes it's just for this case, instead of things being at different rates based on different hauls and things of that nature, we thought it was just more instructive to have the actual volume up. But we can certainly provide dollars if interested.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. I see no further questions. I'll let you move on.
All right. The slide here, just to, make the point that moving pike by rail isn't a new concept for the Alaska Railroad. It's something we've done before, most notably with the construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The Alaska Railroad was heavily involved in that effort. For the construction of that project, you had ships coming into Valdez. The Alaska Railroad actually built about a mile and a half of track in Valdez, where we were helping to move the pipe to a coating and welding facility and then barge it over to Whittier, haul it up by rail to Fairbanks. Certainly, given the alignment of this project, we'd be looking at a different operating concept. But all this to say, this organization can be adaptable and support big projects. And as I mentioned before, we're currently moving a lot of pipe. I mean, perhaps not the volume of what we're talking about with the Alaska LNG project. But, this picture you're seeing here is from a pipe ship that was in Seward this week. I think that picture was taken on Monday. That pipe is traveling north today. But this is one of, over the last 3 years, we've received 34 ships delivering pipe into Seward. And that's going to support the Pica and Willow projects up on the North Slope. So, we remain a big part of moving that material and, doing it in an efficient way. And there's obvious benefits to moving pipe by rail from the shipper's standpoint. There's substantial efficiencies when you've got high volume of heavy materials to move. That's when rail makes a lot of sense. And certainly, I think, offers a benefit to Alaskans as well, just in terms of sparing the highway system, all of the additional congestion and wear and tear associated with moving that along the parks if we can move it by rail instead.
Good. Senator Rocher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair. So I was wondering, what's the longest section of pipe you guys move right now for these PICA projects and others like that?
Through the Chair, Senator Rocher. So this pipe you're looking at here, I believe, was 30-inch 40-foot pipe. But in the past, we have moved 80-foot. So that was, as I mentioned, in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. That pipe was brought to Valdez in 40-foot sections, welded into 80-foot sections, and then moved on 89-foot flat cars. So we do have the capability to move larger pipe as well.
Thank you for the complete answer.
Yep. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. What is your expectation as to where the pipe would be loaded on by the railroad? Is it Seward? Is it Anchorage?
To the chair, Vice Chair Wilikowski, thank you for the question. I think that's actually an excellent opportunity for me to introduce our Chief Operating Officer for the next stage of the presentation, in which we start taking you through that operating concept.
Very good. Thanks, Chair. Oh, before we transition, yes. Senator Clayman?
I think it's for
all right.
With respect to the weight configuration, is there, if assuming the pipeline goes forward, will you need to make any changes to the railroad's ability to carry the weight of the cargo in terms of rails and equipment that you have today?
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Clayman, that's a good question. And no, the rail line, our main line, the weight of the pipe is not necessarily a concern. It's certainly a factor in how we would load flat cars. So, you know, we're a 263,000-pound rated railroad. That's informed by our bridge program. We've been actively investing in our bridges to upgrade that load capacity to bring us in line with lower 48 railroads, but you know, it might be a contributing factor in how many sticks of pipe we would load on a flat car, but we would not envision a need to you know, make investments and improvements to the main line to be able to hold that capacity.
Thank you.
All right, we will transition then. Mr. Hopp.
Well, for the record, this is Clark Hopp. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at the Alaska Railroad. So good afternoon. It's good to be with you. Always excited to talk about railroads and talk about projects. So I've got a captive audience, so excited about that. So as we get into the details about the project, probably ought to clarify where has our data come from? What are we planning for? So just to, I'll walk through that real quickly. You know, we have been, you know, very familiar with this project for quite some time, right? We've been working with the Gas Line Authority, you know, their group for many years. So we've been familiar for the last 10 years with some of the logistics associated with the project. And we're very familiar with the FERC application. That's been a great resource for us. There's a lot of information. If you haven't read it and you got a lot of questions about what are they planning, it's a lot of that is in there. So that's been kind of the baseline for information for us in our planning over the last several years is the FERC application. And then just recently, you know, several of us attended industry outreach by Glenn Farn this fall at Captain Cook, which provided more additional information, but pretty consistent with that FERC application. And that kicked off a series of meetings with Glenn Farn. We've had a handful of meetings with Glenn Farn to talk high-level logistics, not really down into the details yet, but it's enough for us to look at, okay, what is the impact of the Alaska Railroad? How would we handle this volume of pipe? What would our operation look like? What additional resources would we need? So that's kind of been our process over several years. And I guess one more plug before we get into the slides, you know, I would argue that one of the best preparations for this type of project is always keeping your railroad in a state of good repair. And we have worked our tails off the last 10, 15 years of major infrastructure investment. Megan mentioned our bridges. We spent a lot of money on our track. And so we have a very healthy railroad that's well positioned if a project like this comes along. So, so good question from Senator Wilikowski about pipe intake. That's a big discussion on this project. Where will the pipe come? So based on the FERC application, based on our conversations with Glenn Farn, their primary focus to this point has been Seward, the Port of Seward as pipe intake, which makes sense to us that we have obviously a freight dock in Seward that can handle large pipe ships. It currently does. And so then you begin to look at what does Seward need, because this would certainly be a step up in the volume of pipe. But so that's really what we've We've tried to create an agnostic plan that wasn't too tied to two, you know, because our scenarios could change, but that was kind of the baseline as we created what our transportation plan would look like. So primary pipe intake is sewered, supplemented by, you know, possible surge pipes, you know, if you have more than one ship in and you can't handle the pipe and sewered. I think Anchorage is a possibility. Whittier is certainly a possibility. And even Port McKenzie, barring whether there's a rail extension or not done in time, that there is a port there. It would require some trucking to get it to the rail. But all of those are options as surge. But the primary look in our planning has been sewered as pipe intake. As Megan mentioned, there's a lot of still questions around what kind of pipe is coming, you know, and really I don't believe Glenfarne will know until they put out a public, you know, an RFP for pipe from pipe manufacturers. So whether that's an X70 pipe, cross-section pipe, or an X80 pipe, the X70 pipe is a heavier pipe, the X80 is a lighter pipe. And then a big question for us is, will they come in 40-foot joints, or will they come in pre-joined and double-jointed 80-foot pipes? So that's a question that I think the group, Glenfarne, is leaning towards 80-foot pipes, but we don't have that as a definitive. But based on that, the latest discussion was around 80-foot double-jointed pipe. So that's how we've kind of built our preliminary transportation model, is around 80-foot pipes. So the next piece that leads us to is, what kind of cars does that require? And Megan mentioned and showed a picture of our 89-foot flats. Though those were 40-foot pipes on there, we put double 40-footers on there. So essentially they were 80-foot pipes that we're hauling today, as a matter of fact. So that's an 89-foot flat car with potentially 6 to 7 double-jointed 80-foot pipes per car. Okay, so that's kind of the basis of our transportation model. And we looked at moves out of Seward. What does that look like? How many additional trains per week would that require? Now, a lot of that is based on, how will the ships come to us? Will we have big bunches of ships, or will they be fairly regularly scheduled? If they're fairly regularly scheduled, right, we're looking at would be 2 dedicated pipe trains out of Seward a week. And that would run for 18 to 20 months. And so just to give you a little back of the napkin math, this is all rough math just to be able to consume it. But X7, depending on X70, X80 pipe, we're talking anywhere from 680,000 tons to 800,000 tons, depending on the type of pipe. We can typically put 100 tons on a rail car. And so 45 to 55 rail cars per train. So when you do the math, that's anywhere between 130 trains upwards of 200 for pipe, right? So we've showed 170 trains on this slide, but it's somewhere in that ballpark. And just to give you a magnitude, we have close to 2,500 train starts a year on the Alaska Railroad. So that's when we assemble a new train and it leaves a terminal, we do that 2,500 times. Now that includes passenger trains, freight trains, all the trains that we run. So that gives you a magnitude. We're talking, you know, at the high end, maybe 200 additional pipe trains over 18 months. Yeah, sure. So also, you know, there's other things. We know Glenfarne has communicated, you know, about 160 million gallons of fuel. We have a robust fuel business now that we haul. And so some of that fuel will go direct from supplier to Fairbanks, like it already does on the Alaska Railroad. And then some of that fuel would have to be what we call a local, where it would come out of a yard and it would go to some staging areas to help support the pipeline. And then the last piece, you know, is always hardest to get our mind around at the railroad, is what additional ancillary, you know, what additional freight is going to come at us, right? So we expect, you know, our partners and customers that we have in the steamship business, you know, we're talking to them and we expect that business line to grow. Right. We also, like Megan mentioned, we run the weekly barge out of Seattle that has rail cars on it with racks above with containers. We would expect the demand on that business to also grow. And the good story here is that our existing freight business between Anchorage Fairbanks, which would potentially be half of the freight that needs to go for segments 1 and 2 north of Fairbanks, our existing freight service has a lot of scalability. It has a lot of room to grow. We're currently running 6 days a week, about 5,000 tons of train on those 6 days a week. we could certainly scale to 7 days a week and upwards of 8,000 tons. So that's quite a bit of increased volume just in our existing freight capacity that we have on the railroad. Okay. So that was a lot at you on this slide, but before I move on to the next slide, any questions?
There are some questions. I'll start with Senator Myers.
Oh, thank you. So we've mentioned Seward a couple of times. You said that's primarily where the pipe's going to come in, but we also talked about the Seward passenger dock. Last year, as the gas line was starting to make the rounds around here, there was some concern that with the construction on the Seward passenger dock that it would potentially interfere with some freight operations until that construction was complete. Is that a valid concern, and to what extent?
Yeah. So through the chair, Senator Myers, that's a great question. We don't anticipate the passenger dock having any interruption to potential pipe intake.
Okay.
That project is scheduled to be substantially complete this May, middle of May. So that freight dock or the passenger dock, we fully expect. Now, you may have heard out there, we also have a federal grant to widen and lengthen our existing freight dock in Seward. So I'm kind of getting ahead of a question if it's out there. Now, that project, depending on the Seward intake schedule, that, you know, the schedule is still up in the air. We're not sure when pipe is coming. That project is a potential impact. It could get in the way. However, we think we have enough flexibility in that project that pipe intake in Seward is a priority, and we'd either work around it or even delay certain parts of that work so that that dock is always available for pipe intake.
Thank you.
Senator Rocher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was wondering, you made earlier on, you made a statement about Point McKenzie. You said that if the road is finished in time, but you also said it's being talked about. So I'm wondering, if the road is finished in time, is it in contention against Seward, or is it, how does it fit into the equation?
Through the chair, Senator Rauscher, I think my point in Port McKenzie was is that, you know, there's you know, progress on the Port McKenzie rail extension, which if it was built would be beneficial to this project, that's for sure. You know, but it has its challenges and its hurdles to get funded and get constructed. I was referencing Port McKenzie that there is a port there that can offload pipe. And so if we have too many ships to land at, say, Seward, that Port McKenzie could possibly be a surge port where you could send a pipe ship there, they could unload the pipe, go direct to truck, and then truck to some railhead where you can then ultimately put it on the rail.
Follow up,
Senator Rush.
Is the likelihood of that happening a possibility since you're looking at that such a volume of cargo coming over the bow there in Seward?
I think, through the chair, Senator Roger. I think at this point, the pipe intake is so murky as far as what the schedule is. We're certainly worried about surge. We're worried if there's multiple pipe manufacturers, could you get several ships converging on Seward at one time? And so there's several other ports. So until we get some clarity on what that ship schedule looks like, we're just saying every port at this point has to be in the mix from a logistics standpoint at looking at what our options are to offload pipe.
Thank you very much. Well, no, just as a senator for the area, I'm obviously concerned.
Sure. Thanks. Absolutely. I understand.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Do you need any additional capital expenditures to prepare for this project? Any new flat cars? Any new engines?
Excellent. Through the chair, Senator, you're great in transition today, because that's the next part of the next slide. So if it wills the committee, I'll.
Yes.
Short term, what we see right now, and we've known about some of this for quite some time. So there are 6 to 8 current existing spurs that are adjacent to sidings on the Alaska Railroad. This isn't new infrastructure that was identified in the FERC application. Has been identified again in our meetings with Glen Farm that these are strategic locations for the offloading of pipe to a pipe yard that would then transit to the pipeline alignment. And we know where those are at. And we feel like that each one of those locations, we need a certain length to basically park rail cars for unloading. And so actually the 2026 capital budget at the Alaska Railroad included monies to extend those spurs so that we would be ready to accommodate delivering those cars to those spurs. Now, we would like to see some, you know, a green light to go, but we have those projects prepared and are ready to go, so that can happen. Okay. And then also, when we look at our terminals, that's the second point here, terminal improvements, we also have some money set aside in our 2026 capital program, particularly to do some work in Seward, undergrounding utilities, expanding the footprint there so we can have a good surge yard of place for pipe, and also identifying, there's some uncertainty in Fairbanks where that pipe offload would be. And this is a point where I would say transportation is a big part of the pipe, is a big part of this project, but it's really a pipe handling project from a logistics standpoint. Getting it off the ship, getting it on a rail car, and then getting it off the rail car destination to make this whole transportation network happen. It needs to get loaded quickly, and it needs to get offloaded quickly. I saw a question.
Yes. Are you at the end of this slide?
Let me just finish.
Yes, please do.
Senator's question. And then the last is rolling stock. So this is, you know, up to 200 trains on the railroad. Trains take locomotives. And in the summer, we have all those 55 locomotives are all engaged and allocated to those 2,500 train starts that we do. So this dedicated movement would need additional locomotives. We have 12 on here. I would say that's the high end. It could be as little as 4. Probably 8 is the sweet spot, but it could be up to 12 depending on cycle time. There's a lot of things that those numbers depend on. And then those are readily available in the lower 48. Power locomotives in the railroad industry are in surplus. A lot of the class 1 railroads. We currently lease railroad locomotives from the Union Pacific every year for our heavy summer season. We lease 4 or 5 just to make sure that we have enough power to run our business. So that would be a continuation of that, that getting our hands on locomotives would not be hard. A bigger challenge is the potential 389-foot flat cars that we don't have. Those are longer lead items. That's one of those issues that we would need a green light to go out and make sure we're getting those cars and getting them here on time. And the final note, there is no allocation in the 2026 capital budget for those items. That finishes this slide.
Very good. So, Senator Wilkowski, you asked this question. Do you have any follow-ups?
I do. So, and it was particularly pertaining to the rolling stock. If construction, and we're hearing Glen Farne is going to be laying pipe in December, do you have the rolling stock that you need for the end of this year?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we do not have it today. So,
follow up. And then can we expect a capital budget request for that, or do you do your own? I mean, how does this work? I just refresh my recollection on that. And then how quickly does it take to get these things? You need 300 flat cars and 12 leased locomotives.
You want me to? No. All right. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. So let's talk about locomotives first. That's typically a 60-day, 60 to 90 days. It's just finding space on our barge. Most of those locomotives that we've been leasing now are in the Pacific Northwest. We have a strong relationship with the Union Pacific. They're a partner of ours in Seattle. And so that side of it's, I don't have a lot of sleepless nights about locomotives. The 89-foot flat cars is more of a challenge. So we are scouring the country looking for leasing opportunities of used 89-foot flat cars as we speak. We're also talking to flat car fabricators for new builds. And those are up against that schedule that you asked, right? That those could be 6 to 9 month lead times on those, depending if they're lease. Probably more available to get up here in time. If they're a new build, that's a longer lead item.
Follow up.
Yeah, and then in your conversations with Glen Farne, and my understanding is a lot of the pipe will be underground, and I'm just curious how much can they lay pipe in the middle of the winter, or does that, I mean, I'm just curious if there's a disparity between what you're shipping in the winter versus what you're shipping in the spring and summer when the ground thaws, and their construction ability to do this in the winter when everything's frozen.
Well, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'm not a pipeline guy. I am a construction guy. So as I've looked at their high-level schedule that was in the FERC application, also in our discussion, that is a year-round operation. They'll be laying pipe year-round. And quite frankly, some of the work will have to be done in the winter because it's easier to access, you know, that part of the alignment. So it'll be a year-round operation. They'll be laying pipe all year round. It doesn't really they have, I mean, I say X70, X80. If you see the actual pipe schedule, you know, there's multiple different types of pipe for different applications. Primary, you know, but 85% of it is general line pipe. But then there are special, depending on geotech reports and such, there's different pipes that they'll, you know, pipeline crossings under, say, under the railroad is a different pipe, road crossings a different pipe. But I don't believe that would be how Glen Farm manages their delivery. To us, it's pipe. You know, we haul pipe.
Next, I'm going to go, yes, Mr. O'Leary, we'll call on you next.
Thank you, Chair Kiesel. Just following up with the Senator's question about will we be asking for a capital budget allocation? No, we will not. The Alaska Railroad, you know, again, is charged with being self-sustaining. Only in very, very rare and situations have we come to the legislature asking for any kind of funding whatsoever. So as Mr. Hopp noted, or as the slide notes, you know, we've identified roughly $10 million worth of capital that would be needed should the project commitment be made, should we say that this is go. And so we are not, while we are looking at this particular point for the flat cars, making sure we are ready to move when that commitment comes, but we are not moving forward at this particular point. We do have the funding, the capital funding allocated in our 2026. We're a calendar year operation as opposed to the state's fiscal year, but we do have those funds allocated in our 2026 capital budget, however, ready to move should that commitment come forward.
Thank you. So I'm going to move to Senator Kawasaki, who I missed on the previous slide. I apologize. So, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, on the slide, let me think. I guess it was the previous slide, and it was regarding the total number of tonnage over the certain amount or over the year. And if it was 80, I'm trying to get the total compared to a prior slide on the annual freight summary. And so I thought I had that it was 8,000 to 8 million extra tons, but is that actually the case?
So through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. So 2025, we've moved 3.9 million tons. Okay. Of pipe weight we're talking here is anywhere between 680,000 tons upwards of 800,000 tons. So less than a million tons of pipe.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And then
follow up.
Thank you. On the slide that we were just talking about on the lease, I'm going to be back up in Fairbanks. I'm trying to find a rental car. Difficult to find a rental car. It costs $199 a day right now. So you sort of answered the question about the lease locomotives. That's great. And that you're now up against this window if you were to, like 6 to 9 months out, try to figure out whether you can lease that number of cars. Can you just elaborate a little bit more, like what it's going to take? It's not like you can just go on Orbitz and find a car really quick. And so I'm just curious what that would require. Or would you just move things around, I guess? I'm trying to figure out the logistics because you hear different information from different parts and players of the whole thing.
Sure. Through the chair to Senator. So yes to all of it. You know, we currently haul pipe. We have enough flat cars to essentially run a pipe train now dedicated to that service. So that's part of what we would work with Glen Farm. Is all this pipe going to dump on us immediately, or will there, you know, be a plus up on the delivery of pipe? That I don't know yet. You know, those are kind of, matter of fact, we're meeting here in the next week with Glen Farm. Those are the kind of questions that we have. You know, we have certainly had this conversation with Glen Farm about the availability of flat cars and that it's a challenge. And believe it or not, there are several entities out there that do nothing but lease flat cars. And so the North American market knows that the Alaska Railroad is looking for flat cars. Just anecdotally, we had a meeting last week with a group that thought they had an inside track on 170 flat cars. And by the time we got them into our boardroom, they had vanished. But people know we're looking for them. Our procurement department is also out there looking for them. We're also in talks with the fabricators, right? So like the boss said, we really need a green light to go on some of these things.
Follow-up, Senator Kosecki?
Thank you. And just on the total amount, since we've talked about capital planning, one of the things that the Railroad Corporation can do is bond for special purposes. The pipeline was one of those special purposes in 4240. I'm curious, is that a decision that could be made by the board of directors of the railroad without bringing that back under legislative approval? Or is that something that needs to come to the legislature?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, actually about two slides in, we're going to address that. But spoiler alert, any bonds that would be issued by the Alaska Railroad would need to have full legislative authorization, okay. Even though there would be no. Well, we'll get to that. But yes.
Thank you.
All right. Next on the list.
I'll hold my question.
Next on the list is Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question is similar, but sort of cuts in the opposite direction of Senator Wilkowski's. And you've sort of answered it, but I'd like a little more specificity. You know, much of the Alaskan government right now is thinking about ways to prepare for this gas line. But as the chair's staff has discovered, and there's other evidence out there, you know, Glen Farm has missed some deadlines on their FERC application. I think some of us, myself included, remain skeptical that the financing will actually emerge for this project. Hopeful, but a little bit skeptical. And so you said that it's in your 2026 capital budget, but you need a green light. So can you speak a little bit more about what exactly does that mean? You know, how committed are you to spending this money? And then is there some of this money you could spend that would be a general good for the railroad that even if the project doesn't go forward would still be helpful? Or is there some that if you spend it and the project doesn't emerge is sort of a sunk cost? And sort of what kind of risk is there right now in your budget? And at what point do you actually commit, okay, we're going to spend $5 million on this project, even if, and then it may, perhaps it doesn't materialize.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, all really good questions. And it's something, you know, we made the decision working with our board, who is, you know, our really governing body about this, that we need to be prepared for the gas line, but at the same time not commit, you know, a significant amount of resource. I mean, we're certainly doing planning right now, as Mr. Hopp has discussed and all of that, but before we make any kind of capital commitments, we would certainly need much greater security that this project was moving forward, and those would include, you know, agreements with the developer. As an example, and it would be something that we would go back to our board to to release these particular monies. So we built our 2026 capital budget on kind of a with and without approach on this, so that the monies right now are allocated, are being held back, and are not being spent until there is that acknowledgement that we are to move forward on it. If for whatever reason the project does not move forward, trust me when I tell you we've got some very, very other or good other uses planned for those funds at this point. So right now we're like many others, kind of, you know, waiting for that final investment decision.
Brief follow-up, Chair. I'll just say I I appreciate that answer. I think that's a very good answer. You need some kind of actual agreement, some sort of firm commitment before you actually spend money on this. Hopefully you can redeploy those funds quickly if it doesn't emerge. But I just really appreciate that. Being careful with this is, you are a private entity in some ways, or you operate that way, but ultimately this is public money and we don't want to throw good money after bad. And hopefully that's not what we're doing. We've got to be very careful before we spend more money on a gas line, given the state's history. We need something very firm, and it sounds like that's what you're doing. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Myers.
Thank you. So I'm looking at the terminal improvements and the spur extensions, and I'm thinking about construction timeline on those. Glenn Front says they want to start laying pipe in December. They've also said that they're looking at FID about the end of March, if I remember right. So best case scenario, you've got one construction season. I know you've got, when it comes to terminal improvements, you've got a little bit more time in there because I've seen you guys do terminal improvements in the middle of the winter. Timeline-wise, can we get all of this done, and how much farther can they push out FID to get your green light before that starts getting in the way of the timeline for those external improvements?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Myers, I apologize ahead of time for being a little technical in my response here. Those 6 to 8 locations that we're talking about, particularly on the rail, they already exist. And they exist this way. There's typically, not every case, but there's a 6,000-foot siding that exists there. That's a siding. That's where we pass trains, right? And then there'll be a spur, which is a open-ended track that's off of that siding. And in these locations, it may be anywhere from 800 feet to maybe up to the 2,600 feet that we're looking for. But in the interim, if we don't have enough time to get that capital work done in this one construction season, we've prepared a contingency plan in our transportation plan that we would just use those sidings to park the cars until the spurs were available. And we can work around those sidings as they're occupied with pipe cars in the interim until we could get the sidings built out. And with that said, we do build track in the winter. The big hurdle is to get the earthwork done in the summer. So, you know, and we're not talking monumental construction here at these locations.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. I wanted to follow up on Senator Dunbar's question. What is the triggering event for you to go forward on these things? Is it the moment that Glenfarne hits FID? Is it when you have a firm agreement with Glenfarne or a contract with Glenfarne to go ahead and ship these things? When do you pull the trigger and start spending these funds?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the ultimate triggering event will be when the board tells me to at this point. But that will be when there has been a decision to move forward on this, and we are comfortable that we have, the organization is comfortable and our board agrees that we have the correct agreements, or we are far enough along on the agreements that with the developer that we know this is going to move forward and we're going to, we have a project and this is what's needed.
Follow up? All right. I see no further questions, but I wanted to make one comment. You know, listening to you, Mr. Hopp, we have a consultant called Pegasus, and they have reviewed with us the kinds of things that people should be considering as they look at mega projects. And it sounds like that's exactly what the railroad is doing. Contingency plans, but not taking the big dive till you know for sure, but those kinds of things. So I appreciate that. I'll let you move on to slide 8.
And I'll be brief here, and if they're questioned, that's great. But this was kind of ties back to my statement when we started that the best way to be prepared for big projects that come along is make sure your infrastructure is in a state of good repair. And this just talks about some of the investments that we have made and are making. The Port of Seward improvements, right? We have a $25 million freight dock expansion. We talked about the timing a little bit there, and we may have to alter that project. We're also undergrounding utilities in Seward and creating increased laydown space. And that benefits our business in sewer, just not the pipeline project, right? That, we have seen an uptick in business over the last 3 years in sewer, separate from this project. A big one for us is the bridge rehabilitation program. You know, we were pretty excited to celebrate 100 years 2 years ago. I tell you also that means a lot of our bridges are 100 years old, which requires a lot of work. But we have been doing a lot of good work, decade-long, $500 million minimum investment in our bridges. Again, not to get too technical, Bill mentioned it. We're a 263,000-pound railroad. That means we can put – that's what the max weight of a car is. And we try to max those, that weight out all the time to be efficient and moving. We are close with a couple of key bridges that are under construction now that we can begin looking at moving our railroad to 286,000-pound capacity, which is a really big deal. That's quite a bit of an increase in our capacity per rail car. And we will be positioned that's a potential, depending on the schedule, that we could temporarily go to a 286,000-pound railroad for the pipeline construction. So we would be very aggressive at trying to up our capacity, maybe even for short term, to get that pipe over the road. And then we've got $10 million investment we just made in 2024. We acquired four additional locomotives, and that's just general growth in our business. And the one thing I'd add here, when you look at the tonnage, right, tonnage doesn't always represent number of trains. Sometimes some of the things we haul are lighter. And particularly the growth in our passenger business, which requires more locomotives also. So we are busy. We have more locomotives than we've ever had at the Alaska Railroad, and they are all, particularly in the summer, they are all engaged and working. We need them all. And we also mentioned that in the last year, we've increased from 5-day-a-week freight service to 6-day-a-week freight service, and depending volumes that come at us, easily could expand that to 7-day-a-week freight service. So, any questions on our capital
investments? I see no questions. Thank you. Moving to slide 9.
Is this me?
That's you.
Okay. Yes. So another part of this story is, you know, like those 36,000 acres that we own, all right, about 18,000 of those operational acres that is along the railroad. And of course, Glen Farne, the pipeline alignment interacts with our right of way in several different locations. There's pipeline crossings. There's the need for pipe storage yards on our right of way. And so that is a permit need. And so we have been fully engaged. Our real estate department has been fully engaged with A-Star Alaska, and the permitting process has already started. You know, permit area is roughly 28,000 feet extending from railroad milepost 279-6, which is south of Hurricane, to north of the western border of the Healy Reserve. So really almost the northern third of our railroad has quite a bit of interaction with the pipeline alignment. And the railroad continues to work with A-Star to accommodate corridor and reserve permits in support of that planned construction. So I think those discussions and that work has gone very smoothly. That's what our real estate group does, is we're permitting projects all the time. So we are fully engaged in that effort.
I see no questions.
All right. Well, I think we've had a good opportunity to listen to Mr. Hopp talk both about our freight capabilities and also just to touch on some of our real estate interactions with regard to the pipeline. So what I'm going to talk about on this slide is how the possibility of some financial activities and financing with the pipeline. And going to have to take you back into the way back time machine at this point to roughly the 2002 time frame, when a team of bankers and lawyers, bond lawyers, discovered in both the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act, the document that the federal government, the federal legislation that transferred the Alaska Railroad to the state of Alaska, that there was a really some very special abilities granted to the Alaska Railroad that was then reaffirmed when the Tax Act, the Tax Reform Act of 1986 was completed. And this relates to the ability of the Alaska Railroad, much as Senator Kawasaki was referring to some special abilities issuing tax-exempt bonds to finance any one of a number of different things. This was thought at the time to be a very powerful tool that could be used for, wait for it, the gas line back in 2002, 2003 timeframe. And as a result of that, the legislature approved a bill authorizing the Alaska Railroad to issue up to $17 billion of bonds in support of the project that was being considered at the time. There were a number of different caveats to that legislation, or pieces of that legislation, controls, if you will, on that. Not the least of which was that it was subject to the railroad entering into an agreement with, at that point it was considered the producers, with a third party to ensure that the debt service would be paid for that. They were talking about the concept of conduit bonds, which I'll talk a little bit more about here in a moment. So that language, quite honestly, from our perspective and from most other lawyers' perspectives, is very clear as to what the railroad's abilities are to do that. However, it is really literally the Alaska Railroad that has this ability in the U.S. So it was very clear also that the lawyer said, however, before this could be used, you would need a determination from the Internal Revenue Service that it says what it says and that, yes, you are able to issue these kind of bonds. Moot point, as the that particular version, strain of the gas line did not move forward at that particular point, and the bond authorization sat unused for a number of years until the 2018 2018 legislative session, when Senate Finance, related to some another bond authorization we were seeking, said, wouldn't it be nice to kind of clean up some of these older bond authorizations, and repealed that particular piece of legislation. But regardless, we were well aware that before these powers could be brought to bear to be used, that we would need a determination from the Internal Revenue Service about this. So comes now the progress on the 2025 gas line, or comes now the progress on the gas line in 2025, rather. And we took a look at that and said, yes, we still, of course, have this language in the, nothing has changed at the federal law or the federal level about this. And wouldn't it be good to have to understand whether this tool could be used for the gas line should it move forward? In June of 2025, we submitted a request to the IRS laying out what the law, laying out what the intended use of this of issuing tax exempt debt could be, and ask them for a determination as to whether or not this was something that could be used. And so that lay with the IRS until about 2 weeks ago, when Revenue Ruling 2026-4 was released. And this revenue ruling from the IRS effectively clarifies what the railroad's abilities are. And with a couple of minor exceptions, it is exactly what it says it is and exactly what we thought it would be. And effectively, what it means is that the Alaska Railroad, bonds issued by the Alaska Railroad for this project and a number of related projects are projects related to the natural gas pipeline are, by their nature, not subject to what they call private activity rules. Private activity rules are a strain of tax-exempt debt that is constrained by something they call the volume cap as to how much you can issue, and also that it's more expensive debt. It's still cheaper than going out on the straight taxable market, but not being subject to these private activity rules is a very powerful tool that could be very, very useful in perhaps making this, in helping the financing of this project. So the rates, effectively, the rates would be lower than some of the other options out there. There has been no decision at this point. You know, Glenfarne, this is a public ruling. Glenfarne was aware or made aware of this ruling. Many others have been made aware of this ruling. There has been no decision yet to move forward with this, but it's something that we think is a tremendously important tool, something that could be tremendously powerful in helping to finance this project going forward. That said, a couple of really important points. The type of structure that we would be using to go forward with something like this, should it happen, is what they call conduit bonds, where effectively the Alaska Railroad would be, yes, the issuer of such bonds, but the Alaska Railroad would not carry this debt on its balance sheet, nor would the Alaska Railroad be liable for the repayment of these bonds. That would rest with the developer or the group, I mean, whatever subsidiary they may or may not set up about something like that. By statute, well, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, anytime bonds are involved, not bank loans but or anything like that, but bonds are involved, it is statutorily required that the railroad receive authority from the legislature prior to being able to issue those bonds. I know that many people have been concerned about, well, what does this mean? Could there be, again, liability to either the railroad or to the state? And again, as conduit bonds, there would be no liability back to the Alaska Railroad. And by statute, by existing statute, there is Alaska Railroad, or debts of the Alaska Railroad are simply that. They are not debts of the state. They cannot be debts of the state. It is explicitly prohibited in our enabling statute at this point. So that's effectively where it stands. This is, I think, something that is a really, really unique opportunity. Whether or not the developer will take advantage of it at this particular point is, unclear. I don't think a decision has necessarily been made at this point, but we're excited about it because it, as you've heard about the other aspects of the railroad being there to help move such a project along, this is another tool that could assist in, making this long-awaited project a reality.
Senator Wilikowski, question.
You mentioned that the previous bonding authority was $17 billion. Is that still the same?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, previous bonding authority was $17 billion, but that was repealed in 2018 by through Senate Finance started that process by the legislature.
Follow-up.
So what's your bonding? What would be your bonding authority now for this project?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that's unclear at this point. Mm. I mean, from my particular perspective, were it to move forward, I would think we would want a significant amount of bonding authority, given that there are, controls in place that you are not going to be able to issue bonds just because you feel like it. I mean, the way the railroad statutes have, or legislation has worked historically And we've come back for either like bonds for the sewer dock or bonds for our own, you know, capital purposes. We are given a not to exceed amount by the legislature. It's not a requirement that we issue that much, certainly. Those controls, as I mentioned, were, you know, there would need to be an agreement in place, certainly, that for the debt service to be paid out there. And also that, again, the standard that there, of course, would be no liability. But at the end, to the state or the railroad, at the end of the day, the ultimate control is the market is not going to let you issue bonds that they don't believe you're going to be able to repay. Long-winded answer, and I apologize for that.
Follow-up.
Yeah. If you were to issue bonds, say $10 billion or so, hypothetically, does the railroad get anything for doing that, or does the state get anything? Do you get like a share of the interest or a fee or anything like that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that would be something that would just be negotiated between the railroad and the, you know, whoever is the beneficiary of the debt.
Follow up.
Have you had any negotiations to do a conduit bond?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we have had brief discussions with the developer at this point, making them aware of, you know, how we see this, you know, this ability, this power could be, but I wouldn't characterize those as negotiations at this point.
Follow up.
And so this has to be approved by the legislature. So we're here till May, hopefully done in May. Should we expect something before May, or if not, are we next year, special session? I mean, what are the thoughts on that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I think that's a great question. I think it's as I mentioned, and you know, it's a marvelous tool that would be purely. My opinion on this would be great to have in place at this point, but no decision. I mean, this is something that certainly the developer, you know, would have some interest in. We need to understand what their level of interest is at this particular point. Certainly, the railroad's board of directors would need to approve anything like that, us even moving forward to come to the legislature.
Just one last one.
Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
What would be the timeline then from the time that the legislature approved a conduit bond to the issuance of the bond? And so I'm just curious, timeline, is it like a few weeks, a couple of months? And then what does the market expect in terms of clarity? Would they expect like how fleshed out of a project would they expect before something like this went out for sale?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I mean, certainly this would not be something, you know, to be very clear, we have not done conduit bonds at, you know, in the previous bond issuances that we have done at this point. So, you know, we have financial advisors and we have spoken with them about timing and things of this nature. And I mean, it's not, you know, debt bond financing in the municipal market. Is a tremendously cost-effective, tremendously efficient way of doing things. It's not a tremendously quick way of doing things. There are certainly many steps that need to be taken. It's definitely those steps, I think, would be measured more in weeks and months than days at this point, but I couldn't really give you a time frame at this point. A lot of it would be if and when the project moves forward, if and when the developer would be interested in moving forward using this tool, you know, the different approvals that would be required. It's very difficult for me to tell you, you know, from X, it would be here. But I mean, it could be, my guess at this point is it's something that could be done in a matter of months after receiving the approval.
Further questions? Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I dug up the 2002 law, that Senate Bill 296 that passed in 2003, and some of the discussions at the time were that this particular allowance for the Alaska Railroad Corporation was supposed to be that It would broadly permit the Railroad Corporation with the greatest amount of flexibility to accomplish the purpose. And then the purpose is, of course, to build a pipeline. The $17 billion in legislative approval was the cap. And I'm trying to understand, so if it was taken out of statute, no longer in there, do you have a cap as you understand it?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the cap right now is zero. We can't issue a bond without legislative approval. So for us to, we would, you know, to if we were to move forward with something like this, as I understand it, the mechanics would be we would come in with a request for a bill that would have a number in it that would serve as the the not to exceed amount.
Okay. So thank you. Let me restate then. The maximum principal amount of this bond that the railroad could approve was $17 billion in Senate Bill 296. If we would see a bill with a maximum, but it would be based on whatever came from the board of directors.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, presumably it would be the amount certainly that the board approves, but I mean in working in conjunction with the developer, and yes.
Follow up.
A little bit different. You know, we talked about Kubota over this time, and I know some of us do remember Kubota, but it was all about whether this bonding mechanism through the federal government was going to come back due to us as a state in case that bond failed. And I'm just a little curious because we had competing memos back and forth about whether the liability of the Kubota was going to become the liability of the state someday. And I'm just curious if there's legal opinions that surround that discussion in terms of the railroad.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I think it's very clear in our enabling statute, and we can certainly get you that statutory reference, that debt of the railroad is not or cannot be debt of the state. And this isn't even going to be debt of the railroad.
That sounds magical. I guess I'm a little concerned because it sound. I mean, of course, you'll have to come back to the legislature at some point to essentially get that maximum set. There's a lot of things that this pipeline could potentially do. And it sounds like the negotiations are potentially happening between the Railroad Corporation, the entity that might be able to be part of this conduit bond, but not the state that might assume some of these costs. And that's there's costs that are affiliated outside of the bonding itself. So it gives me a little bit of pause just because there's the seven members of the board are not, they're appointed and they're exclusively appointed and not elected by the people of the state, but it sounds like the obligation will exist way past our expiration dates as legislators. Can you give me some comfort that there will be a lot more legislative discretion and approval over a potential issuance of a $17 billion bond?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I can only tell you at this point what has been done in the past, really, and that was certainly a discussion or a rigorous discussion about, the $17 billion authorization certainly out there. But I think there are a number of controls, as I mentioned, in place, the ultimate one being the market, that as to whether or not these bonds could actually be sold. If the concern is this coming back to the state, as I said, we can kind of get the – we're comfortable that it cannot as a matter of law. But we can, again, get you some information on the statutes about that.
Okay, thank you. And I feel more comfortable if we got some sort of legal – advice on that, about the obligations to the railroad, obligations as a conduit, and then who actually assumes it. And just I thought it was very funny because the I'm reading the preparation of the fiscal note drafted in 2002. And how is it that it was prepared by the Vice President of Finance and the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Bill O'Leary? Thank you.
Wow, he's been at it a long time.
I know.
through the chair, to Chair Giesel's question about how long the tenure of some Alaska Railroad employees are, yeah, it's real.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is more a statement that I hope that Glenn Farn and your board hear, although you could also respond to it. You know, we've all had conversations, I think, at this point with Glenn Farn, and they've spoken here as well, the developer, rather. And there's been talk of Department of Energy financing, private financing. This is the first time I've heard about this kind of financing in this context. And what I'll say is I share some of the concerns that I think that Senator Kawasaki was alluding to about the idea that there's no way to pierce the veil or whatever you want to call it and not make us responsible for this bond, given the railroad's potential involvement in it. And so what I'll say is, you know, we are hoping that this project pencils, that the developer can find a way to make this project pencil. And I would urge them and your board to not make it turn on this question of whether or not the legislature will approve this vehicle. That is, it should pencil with some other kind of financing. And maybe this will be some extra icing on the cake. And it means that there's some additional construction you can do, or maybe it even helps their profit margin. So be it. That's fine. But what I don't want to see is an exploding offer that comes to the legislature that says whether or not the gas line goes forward is dependent on you saying yes or no to this railroad bond. That is putting the legislature and the people of Alaska in a position that I think is irresponsible. And I think almost by default, we should say no, because I do not believe that we would not be held accountable, or I should say that if the project failed, that Alaska would not be held accountable. So again, this is more for the folks at Glenn Farn and your board that might eventually talk about using this avenue, this conduit bond. Do not make the project turn on this question. Does that make sense, Mr. O'Leary?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. I don't see further questions on that. I will comment, however, that our risk, it seems to me, is not, well, financial is there, but if only phase one is built, we stand to be left holding a very expensive bag already. All right. So I think you have another slide 11. Looks like we can go on to that one.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Really, this is just the big finish here, for lack of a better term. You know, really, hopefully through the discussions today, we've demonstrated, you know, the railroad's capabilities and our interest. I mean, we are here to serve Alaska and to act as an agent for economic development in Alaska. And I think we do a good job at that, but I think this project, should it move forward, is going to be something that the railroad will be involved with in a number of different aspects, and you know, we look forward to working with all of the different stakeholders to move that forward. And just really with that, just to very much appreciate your time. It's enjoyable to come to the legislature and actually talk a little bit about railroad stuff sometimes too, and that's been good today. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Leary. I appreciate you and Mr. Hopp and Ms. Clemens being here. I appreciate your last slide that you used a caboose for the picture. That was very clever.
Very good.
Coincidence? I think not.
No, I'm pretty sure not. Yes, and it's always fun to see a railroad engine, Alaska Railroad engine. My boys always had model, HO scale, and they have several Alaska Railroad engines and cars. So thank you very much for your presentation. With that, that concludes our agenda today. I do have some announcements. I'm setting an amendment deadline for Senate Bill 180, that's LNG import facilities. The deadline for amendments will be Wednesday, February 18th, that's next Wednesday at noon. I'm also setting an amendment deadline for Senate Bill 227, This is the governor's tax bill, tax compact, sales tax, oil and gas tax. That deadline will be Wednesday, February 18th at noon. So this concludes our meeting. Our next meeting will be this Friday, February 13th. Oh, I also wanted to announce we have enough members present on February 20th that we will have a resources meeting. And it will be the introduction of a bill, an ADF&G bill. So it will just be a presentation. We actually don't even need a quorum, but I think we will probably have a quorum present. So just letting you know that. So our next meeting will be February 13th. That's Friday. Oh, good. 3:30 p.m. And so that will be hearing Senate Bill 158. This is first hearing Cook Inlet, new administrative area. So at this time, we will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:55 p.m.